You know, by the way, with Peter and Paul and Thomas Aquinas and Augustine and Gregory of Nyssa and Francis de Sales and Francis of Assisi all have in common? They're all dead. But we're alive. We are the ones now. We're the church. We're acting as they acted in this fifth and final act of the theodrama, the church. What's the church's purpose? I said at the beginning. To tell the world this great story, tirelessly. Tell the world this great story over and over again. What do? We tell it especially in the liturgy. Source and summit of the Christian life, yes. The church father said the liturgy is like Noah's Ark. It's a place where a form of God's creation is preserved, even in a time of crisis, even when surrounded by sin and death. The church preserves its life on this Noah's Ark, where the liturgy is celebrated. What is Noah's Ark? Well, it's a floating temple, the Father said. More to it, it's an anticipation of Isaiah's great vision, lion and lamb lying down together. It's a vision of the ordered creation. Do you know in the temple in Jerusalem, on the curtain, the veil that separated the Holy of Holies from the rest, there were depictions of the cosmos all over it. That's because right worship gathers the world. Right worship reminds us of the love and generosity and nonviolence in which the world is created. The liturgy reminds us that we are one family, ontological siblings. And so we in the church now, especially through the liturgy, proclaim this great story. You know, in the book of Revelation, when John has the great vision of the heavenly Jerusalem coming down, it's got the pearly gates. It's got the streets of gold. But the most remarkable thing, John says, is in the heavenly Jerusalem, there is no temple. Anyway, well, that's peculiar, isn't it? That was the reason people came to Jerusalem, was to go to the temple. So you think if anything's in the heavenly Jerusalem, it would be a temple. But there is no temple there. Why? Because the city has become a temple. The whole city has become a place where God is rightly praised. Now, go back to Vatican II. What did John the 23rd dream about? That we are the Lumen Gentium. We are the light of the nations. Go forth, therefore, as great Catholic lawyers. Change that culture. Don't be incidentally Catholic. Go forth, therefore, as a great Catholic teacher. Change that culture. Go forth as a great Catholic politician, not incidentally so, but in a way that determines your political convictions. Go forth, therefore, as a great Catholic business leader, not incidentally but essentially Catholic. The holiness, the universal call to holiness, is connected to this Lumen Gentium idea of the church now going forth in all these ways to declare the lordship of Jesus Christ. That's how we unleash dunamis, power. Can I close with a quick little anecdote? 2 minutes, I promise. Because I vowed to myself that I would share this with you in this setting. Late August, I went to my brother's house. And my niece, his eldest daughter, was about to commence her senior year in high school. So he said, oh, go to the table and look at Neela's books. They're all piled up there. So I went over. She goes to one of the best Catholic high schools in the Chicago area. And there were all the books. Top of the pile was Hamlet. Not Reader's Digest Hamlet. Not Hamlet for Dummies. Hamlet. Shakespeare's Hamlet was the top book, right? Underneath that was Virgil's Aeneid. Not Cliff Notes, Virgil's Aeneid, and in Latin. She's studying Latin. So there's one of the most complex Latin texts, and she's studying that. Under that was this big, fat physics book, bristling with equations and complexity. Under that was a big paperback book with a kind of nice picture on the cover, and big print on the inside, lots of pictures. That was her religion book. Does that bother you? That bothered the heck out of me, I tell you. And I went to my brother and said, is there a problem? Do you see with that pile of books? No, what are you talking about? She's reading Hamlet. She's reading Virgil's Aeneid. She's reading bristling complexity in physics. And she's reading a comic book for religion. Well, you know what I did? No, good, thank you, because publishers and teachers, we need you. I went out and I decided, instead of giving her $50, which I usually do for her birthday, I went out and bought volume one of Aquinas' Contra Gentiles. I bought Confessions of St. Augustine. I bought Dante's Divine Comedy. I bought Chesterton's Orthodoxy. And I bought Bonaventure's Mind Road to God. And I brought them to her a week later and said, here's the Catholic version of Hamlet and Virgil's Aeneid. Now, here's my point, friends. We got a smart tradition. The Catholic tradition is a very smart tradition. Intellectually profound, rich. We will not tell our own story effectively if we turn away from that richness. We must stop dumbing down our tradition if we're going to make this story compelling. Good, thank you for that. And so let's do something about it. Let's do it. See, because that's the way, when we tell this story with verve and with panache, that's the way that we will light a fire on the earth. That's the way we will blow up some of this dynamite of the church. Thanks for listening today.